A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 18, 1990, in the series God, Transforming Presence, entitled In Cosmos. The scripture readings are Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5, and John 1, verses 1 through 14. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2, and John 1, verses 3 and 4. Please note that the original recording had very poor sound quality. You may have to adjust your volume accordingly. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I have a rather strange sermon this morning. I don't really know if the very important truth I'm playing with can possibly come to expression or not. I'm not at all sure I'm going to be able to communicate to you what in the world I've been thinking about. And if I do, I'm not at all sure you might think it's important. You might just think you might as well have slept in. I even contemplated taking the offering before the message this morning. But I'm going to try, nonetheless, to say something that I hope will resonate with someone somewhere. This past week, the Oscar nominees were given out, or the films and the actors and actresses that are up for Academy Awards were nominated, I guess you'd say. And I remember a few years ago, there was a film that was a real sleeper and kind of swept everything. Remember Chariots of Fire? A low-budget film. No one gave it much credence. And it really packed a wallop and won a lot of prizes. It was the story of a Christian missionary, which makes it even more surprising. Eric Liddell. Or Liddell, I don't know how to pronounce it, a Scottish missionary, an Olympic runner in 1924. And the story centers around his competing in the 24 Olympics. Remember, he wouldn't run on Sunday and all that struggle that went on. It was a great film. There's a line in that film that I absolutely love. He had a fiance who was a very pious woman who wanted him to return to China, which he intended to do, but first things first, he had to get ready for the Olympics and go through that competition. It wasn't that he was trying to get out of his missionary service, but he wanted to compete. And I think that it seems that she felt that for this was rather frivolous, and that he ought to be on his way to China and preaching the gospel. And at one point, there's a scene in the Scottish Highlands where she had said to him something about God has called you to preach the gospel. And he looked at her and he said, but God has also made me fast. And when I run, I feel God's pleasure. That's a wonderful statement. God has made me fast. And when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Have you ever felt God's pleasure bodily, sensually? Have you ever identified some experience of God, of the Holy, in a realm quite unrelated to what is quote-unquote spiritual? God made me fast, and when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Have you ever had an experience that was so total, mental, emotional, physical, that you sensed the presence and the reality of God. In this brief three-sermon series, I am trying to locate the places where we might be encountered by God and experience the reality of God. Last week was rather obvious. The epiphany of God, the manifestation of God, or the experience of God could be expected to happen in this setting and last week around this table. Not guaranteed, not always, not for everyone, but now and again, here and there, for this one and that one, in this setting we might expect epiphany. We might expect the breakthrough to us of that reality that is beyond us. And next week, in the arena of history, that's not so hard to understand either, because the Scripture is a story, a historical story of God's involvement in our history. But today, I want to suggest that there is the potential for the experience of God, the unveiling of God, the epiphany of God, if you will. Beyond the church, beyond the narrow parameters of what we generally designate our spiritual experience, I want to say that there is an unveiling of God in the broader cosmic scene, in the universe, if you will, in the created order. I want to say that one can meet God and know the transforming presence of God in the wider landscape of our human experience. We have, in the Christian church, spoken about God with a double reference in our traditional theology. We've talked about the transcendence of God, God beyond us, and the immanence of God, God involved in the created order. But I suspect that we have not done a great deal with the experience of God in the immanence of creation, in the structures of our reality, in the physical universe, and in our experience of creation. And I want to point today to that sphere as a place in which God might be experienced, hoping that we might, through this, be sensitized to it, so that maybe, as Colette said last week to the children, we might develop epiphany eyes, that we might see through, that we might come to a greater, broader, deeper sense of God in the whole created order. We have been quite clear, I think, on Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And it is obvious when we go to the gospel and we read the prologue to John's gospel that John is paralleling the creation account. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made by Him, and apart from Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of the human person, deliberately, intentionally presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ in the framework of the doctrine of creation, or the reality of the creation by the God who is now moving into this created order and this historical arena in Jesus Christ. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning was the Word, and all things were made by the Word. And, verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. John is interested in telling us about Jesus. John is telling us the gospel. John is telling us about the incarnation of the Word. But in order to tell us the good news about how God moved into our lives in Jesus, he sets the context. And the context is the creation of the cosmos, of the universe. So that the universe, the created order, is the stage in which the Creator God now moves in Jesus in order to reclaim his creation. I think we've understood that. In John's day, it was important to say that because there was a whole bevy of people, a whole movement, philosophical, religious movement, that denied that God had any connection with the world, that saw matter as evil, that matter stemmed from another deity over against God. And so for John, it was important to say, God, world, Jesus, salvation, to make that connection clear. But you say to me, well, that's not our problem. What are you getting at? No, I don't think that's our problem, because I think we have understood in our biblical tradition that God created the heavens and the earth, and that it is the Creator of the heavens and the earth that comes to redeem us in Jesus Christ our Lord. But we've got another problem. Our problem is not that we deny or separate the God of creation from the God of our salvation. The problem is for us that having come to accept that, we have pretty much cut the whole realm of creation loose from God. Not because we see it as the product of an adversarial God, or as identified with evil or darkness. We don't believe that. But we fail to keep together God the Creator, who moved to our salvation in Jesus, with the creation that he brought into being. And I hesitate to say this because there's been such an unfortunate, unnecessary conflict between science and religion. And you know that I don't give credence to that conflict. I think it's unnecessary and ill-founded. And that conflict is the result as much of the blindness of the church as of the blindness of some scientific thinkers. But I do have to say that the problem I'm addressing this morning did rise with the rise of the natural sciences. And I can't begin here to go into the history. That could be developed very clearly. There's no doubt about how that whole thing developed. But what we have come to in the modern world, and I'm thinking now in the last couple centuries, we have come to an idea of God and salvation, and the whole natural realm as a self-contained, autonomous entity over here. So that when we think of God, when we deal with God, we deal on a very narrow track in the church, and we think about our sin and our rebellion and our guilt and the atonement and forgiveness and all of this kind of spiritual stuff in a very narrow little track, and the rest of our lives we live out in the world as a sphere that is quite unrelated to the sphere of our spiritual relationship to God. We are totally secular people. I am a secular person. I worship on Sunday, and I live the rest of my life out in the world with satellites and space probes and television tubes and computer chips and that kind of thing, and I see very little connection in my daily life and work. Well, my work, I see a connection, but in your work, in the laboratory or the factory or wherever, very little connection between what happens here on Sunday morning and what goes on in the rest of the world. Just think about it a minute. We talk about two realms, supernatural and natural. That's most unfortunate. That the acceptance of that bifurcation is or was a desperate act on the part of the church that yielded the whole natural realm as though there was a whole realm out there and saved this little piece, the spiritual in God, so that we would have something to hold on to. God and reality, God and world, God and nature, God and cosmos, for most of us, most of the time, has very little relationship. So we worship God, we read our Bible, we speak about sin, forgiveness, heaven. We have this little compartment that we call spiritual or religious. And then the whole other realm, we grant to the whole other realm self-existence as though it were autonomous, going on its own, quite apart from God. And I think what happens is that so much of our life is lived, after all, in the created order, in the world of science and technology and in the world of leisure, play, and pleasure, that there's very little, a little piece of our life that is still saturated with a sense of God. And a great deal of it happens here at church because the world rolls on. We speak of natural law. You know what natural law is? That's the way the world works. That's something intrinsic in the physical universe that always operates the same way, makes it predictable, makes science possible. But we speak about natural law. The book drops. Law of gravity. We don't stop to say, God made the universe such that there is a gravitational force that keeps all things in order. Now we speak of natural law. And then when there are things that we cannot explain scientifically, well, those are still the mysteries that perhaps we'll pray about, but we suspect, I think, that we may even discover those things too. And kind of subtly, we sort of think that what we can explain in terms of natural causation, chemical reaction, chain reactions, and so forth, what we can explain in the natural world in those terms are things that belong to a realm quite apart from our experience of God. Now, are you following me? Got one nod. Either a yes or sleeping. That's the nice thing about nodding off. I always see it as affirmation. What does this matter? Why am I even struggling with this thing this morning? Two disastrous consequences of this situation. The first consequence of seeing the created reality as cut off from God, as a natural realm, not permeated by the life-giving Spirit. First consequence is that we have exploited creation and we are in dire peril of killing our planet. There was a conference on justice, peace, and the integrity of creation this past summer, sponsored by the World Council of Churches. Interestingly, even that title, Justice, Peace, and the Integrity of Creation, that's new. It used to be the division of justice and peace. Everyone understands why the church should be interested in justice and in peace. But now this office has the title Justice, Peace, and the Integrity of Creation to take cognizance of the peril of the planet, the ecological crisis. Gordon Verhoeven's brother Jim is the Secretary for Justice, Peace, and the Integrity of Creation for the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, of which Alan Bosack is the president in Geneva. And another Reformed Church person, Wesley Michelson, is the Secretary for Justice, Peace, and Integrity of Creation for the World Council of Churches in Geneva. And both of them happen to be editors on that outstanding theological journal entitled Perspectives. Now, in Newsweek magazine, this conference was reported. And it tells about the ecological crisis that is being recognized today, not necessarily by theologians, but by scientists, really. And some say it's more serious than others, but I think there's quite a consensus today that we have not treated the Earth well. And in this story, there's a cartoon. It has six frames. You can see it, of course. Well, you can see. Boys and girls can see. And in each frame is the globe. And it is the globe, or Mother Earth, that speaks. Frame one, I gave you life. Frame two, you gave me acid rain, nuclear waste, toxic waste, and some kind of ozone layer depletion. Frame three, Mother Earth still speaking. You gave me destroyed rainforests, mountains, and wildlife, and created a greenhouse effect. Frame four, you gave me polluted oceans, rivers, lakes, and streams. Frame five, now the globe is twisted. And all it says is cough, wheeze, cough, choke, cough. Frame six. Is this any way to treat your mother? Now, is the ecological crisis a concern for Christian people? Is the ecological crisis a theological matter? is the ecological crisis a biblical matter? I think it is. And I don't know, you hear some of the dire predictions of some scientists, and you hear more moderate views of others, and I don't know just where the truth lies, but I would say this, that in Western culture in the last couple of hundred years, with our scientific breakthroughs of knowledge and our technological achievements, we have exploited the earth, and we have created some critical conditions that do threaten healthy life on this planet. And some even blame the biblical tradition for this, because it says in the first chapter of Genesis, if I had gone on to read, that the human person was to take dominion over the earth and to subdue it. And that has been interpreted by some as exploit the earth. Just exploit the earth for whatever it's worth. Now that's not a proper understanding of that passage. Rather, the stewardship of the earth, the care and nurture of the earth. But what we have not done, frankly, what I have had really no sense of all the years of my ministry, is any kind of a spiritual obligation to the physical universe. I always have operated on the basis that it was there, get out of what you can, subdue it, dominate it, exploit it, develop it. And I have to say, I have had to come back, take a second look, rethink the whole thing, and I have to say to you, my people, that we need to be concerned about the state of the earth, the planet, the universe. You know, the old religion, the most primitive religion, was animism, where you saw God in a bush and God in a pole and God everywhere, and people lived with fear and that kind of animistic spirit that arose out of the earth. And one of the things that we have celebrated in the past in the biblical tradition is that we have been liberated from that, that nature was desacralized so that science was possible. Well, I wonder if it is not time for us once again to cultivate a sense of awe before the sacredness of the earth, because God created the heavens and the earth. The crisis is real. And I think the concern is biblical. But there's a second consequence that I want to point to. And that is, I think, that we have missed something. We have missed something in not seeing God in the wonder of the created order. I took a text from Black Elk this morning. The Native American Indian religion had a great sense of the sacredness of the cosmos. And Black Elk was one of the great spirits of Native American lore. And this statement, we should understand well that all things are the works of the Great Spirit. We should know that He is within all things, the trees, the grasses, the rivers, the mountains, and all the four-legged animals, and the winged people. And even more important, we should understand that He is also above all these things and peoples. A statement from Native American religion, but reflective of a tradition that saw God and experienced God in the created order. I say we have missed something. Our little narrow track of finding God in church, or finding God only in the realm of redemption, of finding God only at the cross and resurrection, we've missed the larger context in which that other is kind of the mini drama. The larger biblical drama is the cosmic drama. And we have to learn again from some other sources the possibility of the encounter of God in that larger arena, the wonder of creation. We have shortchanged ourselves. We do not often enough stand in awe of what we say is natural. We speak of it as a natural phenomena. It's not a natural phenomena. It is a phenomena of the one God who created all and who invites us to experience God's presence in the beauties of creation, the wonders of nature, the created order. We have shortchanged ourselves and therefore miss that transforming encounter in the larger landscape, which is the landscape God created as the home for God's people. Scott Peck, in his book, The Road Less Traveled, speaks about the fact that it's not a wonder that we get sick, but it's a wonder that we get well. That it's not a wonder that there are problems in the world, but it's a wonder that the world doesn't totally unravel. And then he points to a larger grace. We need epiphany eyes to see a larger grace, a positive vitality of life, to be able to experience a catch of the throat and a tear in the eye at a sunset, at the wonder of a child, at a puppy's wagging tail. To think in larger measure than that narrow stream of redemption, to think of the large cosmic sweep, because this is our Father's world. To have a little more of the experience of St. Francis, who saw God in every flower and blossom and heard God's voice in every babbling brook. Creation, epiphany, is not enough, but to miss is to miss the marvel of the cosmos, which is God's creation. So, maybe as we sing St. Francis' hymn, we'll begin to develop epiphany eyes.